Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 338. And last time we were talking about the fact that God gave a special task, a special instructions, and a special calling to the people that He chose, the priests, to do the service, and obviously the Levites also to help with them. And then He forbade at the same time anyone else from ever participating in that service. And the implications that it had for the people of Israel in other areas, in terms of prophets, in terms of false prophets, in terms of people that God called to do the work and others who do it on their own. And so the people of God who study the law of God day and night, meditate on it, they are able to discern right from wrong. They are able to become the very elect. They are able to become the smart, you know, the wise sheep that know the voice of Christ. Well, this is Christ speaking through and through from beginning until the end. And therefore they would know which people are of God, which people are not. You see? That's what Christ was saying, by their fruit you shall know them. And unfortunately, because people are not doing it, they are being deceived. Oh yes, a lot of people come and in the name of Christ and do their own thing and teach a lot of good works, a lot of good things. They are sincere people. And they go all around the earth doing all kind of works, you see? And people are happy with it, and there are good results, and they all praise God for it, and say, oh, the Lord had done this, and the Lord had done that, and the Lord opened doors here and there, and things like that, and all kinds of things happened there, you see. But all that was man-made, human efforts, you see. And it's not of God. And so all these people come at the end time to Jesus Christ and said, Lord, Lord, open the door for us too. You know, look at all the good works we've done in Your name. We preach in Your name, you see. But Christ didn't call them. He didn't use them. They were not elected by Him. They did their own thing. Yes, a lot of things that they have done was good. But Christ would not acknowledge any of that good. He says, I don't even know you. Why? Because you're workers of iniquity. You see? You do not follow My laws, My prohibitions about this and that and the other thing. You see? You do your own thing. You call yourselves. You dare approach Me when I haven't called you. You come and claim that you are ministers of Jesus Christ and you're going to speak in My name, and you give a lot of good information to people, yes, and you lead them to righteousness to a certain degree, and then you deceive many. I'm not going to accept you. I'm not going to accept any of the good works that you have done. What a shame. What a waste of life. Many people are sacrificing their lives in the process of doing it. Husbands and wives sometimes, you know, whole family is doing it. They go all over the world, missionary work, whatever it may be. Or just, you know, in town, doing a lot of work, sweating, helping, serving, giving, all kind of things like that, and all in vain. Why? Because God hasn't called them to do what they're doing. You see, and that's rebellion. That's exactly what it is. And when people come to the tent and tabernacle and say, we want to do this, you know, we want to serve, you know, we want to help. So, you know, we're going to move, you know, the furniture and things like that in the tabernacle, or clean, or do things like that. Well, what's wrong about that? You see? Or stand up and do the job of a Levite when God hasn't called them to do it. Oh, that sounds good in the sight of men, but God says, no, you can't do it, period. And that's all there is to it. And when people insist on doing it, they're not going to be rewarded for that, even though they've done a lot of good. And that's exactly what Christ tells them at the end. You know, all the good works that they have done are meaningless to Me because I haven't called you, and along with the good that you have done, you also injected a lot of poison because they did not even know where it came from. You see, you don't know what manner of spirit you are, and that's very unfortunate for people who are otherwise are sincere and good people and righteous to a degree and nice to be with that fall for it. Why? All that because they do not study the law of Christ. The law that He gave through Moses in ancient time, later on to the prophets, later on through the disciples, and in person Himself when He came, you see. When people do not follow all that and they begin to invent their own ideas and begin to twist the scriptures to mean whatever they want it to mean, so they can be, you know, doing whatever they want to do, you see. Christ is not accepting any of that. This is called stubble and straw and wood, and it's going to burn. And only the gold and the silver that God Himself had created is going to be accepted. And so let's be aware of these kind of things and not be fools, because a lot of fools out there, you know, just like W.C. Field, you know, used to say, that's when he was alive, every day a sucker is born. I got plenty of them out there. And so they hear somebody on TV or here and there, whatever it may be. He gives them a few words about Christ, and then, you know, he does his own thing. They don't know the difference. And, you know, they're writing him a check, send him money, whatever it may be. That's not of God. And so let's continue here with verse 18 of chapter 18 of Numbers. God tells the priest what to do with the sacrifices, with the offerings of Israel that are brought to him. And in verse 18 we read, "And the flesh of them shall be yours." You see, the flesh of all the sacrifices shall be yours. "And all the heave offerings of the holy things which the children of Israel offer unto the Eternal I have given you." In other words, if I haven't given it to you, don't take it. Well, people don't think like that. And he says, "I give it to you and to your sons and your daughters with you as a due forever." And he'll continue repeating that statement, which people don't pay attention to, but spiritualize and say, "Yeah, that was forever in the old days, but now it's for me." And so he says, "It is an everlasting covenant of soul before the Eternal unto you and to your seed with you." It makes it very plain. It is a covenant that God made with the priesthood. And a part of that covenant is the sacrifices that they receive, the offerings that they receive. You know, the certain things that God said should be given to them by the people of Israel. A covenant of salt. And a covenant of salt is something that never is done away with. You see? That's the reason why salt is used in those covenants. It's a preserver. It's supposed to be, you know, in human terms, forever. As long as we are human, it's going to be there. And people cannot spiritualize that away and begin to say, "Well, now that belongs to me." You see, because there's no temple, no priesthood, now it belongs to me. You see? Well, to take care of the ministry, Christ had instructions for that. You labor for them, you know, they take care of you, you know, they feed you, whatever they give you, you know, be content with it. And don't you be, you know, demanding more and more and this and that and the other thing. And that's what people do. And they do a lot of work, and much of it is in vain, which is very unfortunate and tragic. And that's very plain. You cannot stand up one day and say, "Well, God made an everlasting covenant of soul with me, and so please give me this, you know, this food, you know, this money, or this whatever it may be." Can't do that. You'll be a liar if you do, and a lot of people do it anyway. Use different words for it. I say, "I'm coming in the name of Christ, and so give me the tithe, give me your tithe, give me your offerings, and give me, you know, plus, and the special donations, and your wills, and your home when you die, and this and that and the other thing." That's what they're after. That's why Christ said, "All those who came before me," and for that matter, he said also after me, later on, when he says, "Many shall come in my name," he said, "All those who came before me were thieves and robbers." You see? Thieves and robbers do not come to your home in order to look at your nice pictures on the wall, and then they take off and say, "Oh, how wonderful it is." No, they come to steal. And that's what he said about the spiritual leaders of Israel. Bunch of thieves and robbers. That's all they're after. Oh, they'll preach to you anything you want to hear. But the bottom line is money. That's what it says on the money in this country. In God we trust. You see? Well, money becomes God. Filthy lucre. They're not there to teach the law of God. Because if they were to teach the law of God, you know, they'll be disqualified by those teachings. Most of them anyway. And so that's what he's saying here. It's a covenant of salt. It's unbreakable. And they're going to continue, you know, to continue to receive it. And even when the temple was not there, after all, think about it. The priests, the Levites, were divided among all the tribes of Israel, and every time, you know, they had the heave offering and tithe and things like that, they gave it to them at the gate, whether there was a temple there or not. So that was not the issue. You see? So they continued to receive it as long as they continued to teach the people of God the truth. And many of the people that were converted, that followed Christ, you read it very plainly in the book of Acts and other places, there were thousands of priests that followed Jesus Christ and his teachings. And you think they stopped being supported by Israel? No, according to the law of God, they had to continue to do it. And they did it. You see, and they continued to serve God. And his people, you know, service of God does not mean only the temple. That was only part of it, you see. But the constant service throughout, you know, the life of Israel on a daily basis, you see, in their own land, in their own territory, in their own, whatever it may be. In other words, the teaching of the law of God, the teachings of so many things that they had to do, you know, continue to to do the work of the priest, of healing, you know, the teacher, of you know, many things like that. And as long as they continue to do it, you know, they continue to receive it. It's when they departed from it themselves. Well, that was a different issue at the time. But in either case, the law of God should determine how things should be done. And if people study the law of God very carefully and very, you know, meticulously to know exactly how to deal with everything, then they're going to follow the law that God gave, which God says it's not done away with. Not one jot, not one tittle shall pass from the law. And this is what Jesus Christ, our high priest, said that very plainly. And how many people pay attention to that? You know, they just took it as an ethereal statement. Oh, it sounds good. Well, it just means the Ten Commandments and everything else is okay. So he said, I gave it to you by covenant of salt before the Lord unto you and to your seed with you. And the Lord, and Jesus, you might say, and Christ, said unto Aaron, I speaking directly to him, you shall have no inheritance in their land, neither shall you have any portion among them. Well, that's the bad news, but not the good news. I am your portion and your inheritance among the children of Israel. I'm going to take care of you. And then he gave him the instructions of how. That's what we read so far. You see? So God is the inheritance of the Lord. That is, of Aaron, of the priest. That means, so whatever you give to God, the priest receives it in the name of God. And that's what he means. I'm your inheritance. I'm your portion among the children of Israel. And unto the children of Levi, behold, I have given all the tithe to the children of Levi, not just to anybody, because they have a task to perform. And as long as they perform it, obviously they get it, and if they don't, that's their problem. You see, even then, Israel was not obligated to give to the priest or the Levite anything unless they were doing their job. It's not just, well, because the law is there, you know, do it anyway, no matter what. You see, because there have been a lot of Levites and priests of Israel, unfortunately, that were fornicating, that were, you know, Hellenizing, that were watering down the religion of God and things like that, and people stopped giving that to them, and many of them became false prophets. You see, so God, you know, is not putting that law there of tithing unconditionally. No, it is conditional. You do your job, you get paid. You don't do your job, you don't get paid. That was as simple as that. Israel, you know, that knew the law of God, they were not stupid. They knew what to do with their money. You see? Which is God's to begin with. And they gave it to God. They didn't give it to a false prophet. Then you wouldn't be giving it to God. You'd be giving it to another spirit. And so you become guilty of supporting the work of the ministry of the devil himself. A lot of people are doing it without even realizing what they are doing. And so he says, I'll give to the children of Levi all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance in return, you see, for their service which they served. And you study the book of the law and you find out a lot of things that they're supposed to do. So God makes it conditional. In return for the service. But if they do not render service, what should you pay them? And if you give you only half of the service that's supposed to, you pay them half. You give them 10% of that service, you give them 10%. But if they give you the 100% of what they're supposed to do, well, it's 100%. It's as simple as that. And people who do not study the law of God, they don't understand it. And so other people can come and deceive them. You know, I'll serve you only one day, but, you know, give me my salary for the whole month. Why? That's not what the law of God said. Yeah, that's what people do because of ignorance. So we must know what the law of God says so we can tell whether those people are really of Christ, whether they follow Christ, so we can follow them as Paul said, as the follow Christ. And people do not study the law of God. They're not able to do it, obviously. And so he says, in return for their service which they serve, even the service of the tent of meeting. And of course, that's only a part of it. Much of it had to do with the daily life in Israel. Verse 22, and henceforth the children of Israel shall not come nigh the tent of meeting, lest they bear sin and die. You see, that's the overriding principle. Unless God calls you to His service, you know, go to the movies, be a farmer, be a dentist, do something else. And a lot of people don't understand that, unfortunately. And one way or the other, we're going to pay the penalty for it whenever God chooses to execute the penalty. Verse 23, but the Levites alone. You see, he repeats it again and again in so many ways. The Levites alone not somebody else alone, shall do the service of the tent of meeting. You see, and that goes for every other responsibility of the head in the 48 cities, and they shall bear their iniquity. You see, in other words, if they are not doing their job, or they allow, you know, they allow somebody else to come and join them that is not supposed to be there, they're going to have to pay the penalty for it. God is not a respecter of anyone. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. Are the generations still around? You see, we're alive, aren't we? The generations are going on. That's what God says. And how many people break this statute? Right and left, they are doing it. Because why? They already got it in their mind. The law of God is done away with. Don't worry about it. Now we've got our own law. We've got a New Testament law. We're not an Old Testament church. We're a New Testament church. And all the terminologies of the great whore the Church of Rome has invented, and people follow it to this very day, and many of them are the people of God. And they don't know any better. You see, it shall be a statute forever throughout your generations among the children of Israel that shall have no inheritance. You see, their inheritance is God, the things that God, the people give to God. Verse 24, for the tithe of the children of Israel, which they set apart as a gift unto the Lord, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance, you see, unto the Levites alone. Therefore, I have said unto them, among the children of Israel, they shall have no inheritance. And that was the office of the priest and the Levite. You're not going to get inheritance, you know, with all the rest of the tribes of Israel, but you're going to get all this. And obviously Israel was supposed to give them towns and cities and things like that. That's by command of God. It's not out of their own, you know, generosity. God commanded those things, and so they gave them 48 cities. And if he said, you know, later on he said, you know, if you have a greater portion of land, you know, you have more territory and all that, well, give them more cities. In other words, you need teachers to teach you the law, the ways of God. And so obviously you're going to take care of that. You see? But they did not divide the land for them, just like they did with the others. But they still gave them what they needed. You know, the laborer is worthy of his hire. That's the principle. Never changed. It's not a new thing that Christ was teaching. You see? And so the ministry of Jesus Christ received help. Received, you know, the support that it needed in accordance with the command of Jesus Christ, as Paul said. The Lord has ordained. He didn't invent that. Those who preach the gospel should live in the gospel. And that's what the priests and the Levites were doing. You see? And he gave them the exact instruction how to do. But certain things he gave only to the priests and to the Levites. And as for the ministry of Jesus Christ, well, he gave them the support that, you know, that people should take care of their needs. But you don't see any one of the apostles ever using this teaching, this entirety of the teaching of the tithe and the offerings and the heave offerings and the peace offerings and the first door and firstling and things like that. You see, they did not use that because they knew that's by covenant of salt given only to the sons of Aaron and Levi. You see? And they did not come and use this law and spiritualize it away and say, well, no, it's for us. You see, we have to know. We have to know exactly what Christ says about this and about that. And the change of our administration should be understood from that point of view too. And the responsibility of the priest and the Levite to begin with. What is it that they are to do? And in return for that, they receive all those things. And if they do not do that, or they do only partial, well, they get their, you know, their salary partially. And the Eternal, verse 25, spoke unto Moses, saying, moreover, you shall speak unto the Levites, and say unto them, when you take of the children of Israel the tithe which I have given you, see, you don't take it for yourself, from them for your inheritance, then you shall set apart of it a gift for the Eternal. Now the Levites are given this instruction, what they are to do with the tithe that they receive in all the 48 cities. And the Israelites, when they harvested whatever, they came to the Levite at the gate, you see, in their cities, and gave it to them. The Levite didn't come and grab it from them. They had no business doing it, you see. It was an offering that the children of Israel did voluntarily, based on the law of God, if they were obedient, whatever it may be. And now the Levites were supposed to take one-tenth of that, and this is what he says here to the Levite, and I say unto them, when you take of the children of Israel the tithe which I have given you from them for your inheritance, then you shall set apart of it a gift for the Eternal. Now what is that gift? Even a tithe of the tithe. Not 20%, not 30, you see. A tithe of the tithe. Take 1/10%. Why? Because there are so many Levites And not that many priests. It's only one family, you see, of the priests. But many, many Levites. So obviously, all they need is a tithe. That's all. It has nothing to do, you know, with intelligence or office or responsibility, you know, and well, you know, because you are the CEO of the priesthood, you know, you get that much and things like that. They took a tithe and they divided it among themselves. You get what you need to eat. You have many kids, you need more. You have less kids, you need less. And that's the way the work of God, not the work of man, works. Now, people do not follow that. You know, they follow the world for an example. If I'm the CEO of the organization or the president or vice president, whatever, well, I get a huge salary, and all those you peons, you know, out there, little workers, you get a little bit, and that's contrary to the law of God. According to the law of God, you divided it among all according to their needs. You see, that's a totally different way of life. People do not follow that, and yet they claim to be the servants of God. What an audacity. And so he says, you take a tithe of the tithe. That's all. The priest cannot claim, you know, I want 50% of it. But today they do in different ways. Verse 27, and the gift which you set apart shall be reckoned unto you as though it were the corn of the threshing floor and as the fullness of the winepress. Thus you shall set apart a gift unto the Lord. And remember, it's for God, and so nobody should mistreat it and take it lightly and think it belongs to them. No, it doesn't. It belongs to God. And so God will determine the rules and regulations of how to use it and what, you know, what amount and things like that. And so he said, you shall set apart, verse 28, a gift unto the Lord of all your tithe, which you receive of the children of Israel, and thereof you shall give the gift which is set apart unto the Lord to Aaron the priest. Out of all that is given you, you shall set apart all of that which is due unto the Lord. That's a debt you have to pay. And you give it to the priest and or his family. Of all, the best. That's what God commanded. You see, don't give, you know, the cheap product, because as representative of God himself, you're not going to give him the cheap things that you have, but the best that you have. You see, thereof. And if you remember that you're giving it to God and not to a man, well, your attitude is a little bit different. Even the hallowed part thereof out of it. Therefore, you shall say unto them, when you set apart the best thereof from it, then it shall be counted unto the Levites as the increase of the threshing floor and as the increase of the winepress. You see, the things that God himself was involved in growing. That makes a big difference there, what God is talking about, the blessings that he gave them. And he created those things. That's another materialistic things that people go after. Send me your money. You know, they gave them, you know, the produce of the land that God himself was involved in blessing Israel. And verse 31, and you may eat in every place, in other words, whatever your cities are, 48 cities, you and your households, for it is your reward. For what? In return for your service. So if you don't serve, no reward. You see? After all, when you go and get a job, what's your reward? Well, your salary at the end of the week or the month. But if you don't do the work, if you don't show up, why should you be paid? That's exactly what he's saying here. It's as simple as that. A lot of people are just, you know, having a lot of fun, and yet they claim the tithe to themselves and do their own thing. He says it should be for reward in return for your service in the tent of meeting or whatever it may be all around the nation. And you shall bear no sin by reason of it. If you abuse this law, he said, you're going to bear sin. You're going to be guilty. You're going to have iniquity. And people don't pay attention to that. And they misuse the money that God gives to his work, or they misuse the whatever that in the old days, you know, they gave to the priest or the Levite. He says, you better be careful what you do with it, seeing that you have set apart from it the best thereof, and you shall not profane the holy things of the children of Israel, that you die not. Now, that's a warning that he gave to the ministry, to the priesthood, to the prophets, to those who do the work of God to this very day. You mess around with that, you know, that you've been given to in return for your service. You see, you consume it on your own in selfish ways, you do your own thing, you're going to die. And God is going to choose the time for it. A lot of people don't realize that they're on death row, especially among the leaders in religious circles, because they have abused the sacrifices of God. You see, they have profaned the holy things, whatever they may be, the holy things that Israel gave to God, you see, and people, human beings that God had chosen, and only the ones that God had chosen personally by calling to receive them, you see, and use them properly, honoring God, not profaning Him, not doing their own thing, and not having the wrong attitude about it. And when people study the law of God and they see all these things, this is the mind of Christ. And so when Paul says, let this mind which was in Christ be also in you, that's an ethereal statement if you don't know what Christ is all about, what His teachings are, what His laws are, what His warnings are, what His prohibitions are, what He said you can do or you cannot do. You see? And so a lot of people don't study the law of God. They say, well, you know, it's done away with, it's not for me, and yet I'm going to put on the mind of Christ. Well, those kind of people are going to show up before Christ and He will say, I don't even know you, because the only way I'm going to know you is when you put on me, all of me, drink my blood, eat my flesh, you know, feed yourself with my teachings, my instructions, live by every word that proceeded out of my mouth. And if you don't do it, I don't know you. So I'm not, you know, impressed with all the things that you have done. That's, you know, meaningless to Him. And when people don't understand that, well, they're playing games. And when the time comes, they're going to have a rude awakening. You know, and God would say, dogs are without. You go bark all you want out there. I'm not going to open the door to you. Chapter 19. We read here. And the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, He speaks to both of them. You know, in other words, wherever the instructions are necessary for both, He speaks to both. When it's only for Moses, He speaks to Moses. If it is to Aaron, He speaks to Aaron. If it is to the Levite, He speaks to the Levite. You see, if it is to every single one of us in particular, He speaks to every single one of us. So God has different ways of speaking to us, either collectively or in particular to someone or to all of us, whatever it may be. You see, that's how He's in us, living His life in us, and He abides in us, and the Father abides in us through His teachings, through His Word. And so He knocks on the door. You know, anybody's here. You see? And people, if they open the door to His teachings, to His instructions, to His words, He's going to come in and have dinner with you. Spiritual dinner. And that's what the study of the law is all about. When you sit before God and, you know, and you sit at His feet, so to speak, not the feet of men. You see? Not the instructions of man, not, you know, the pontification of man, His own opinions, whatever it may be, His own explanations, you see, but that of God Himself. And so that's what we read here. And the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, this is the statute of the law which the Lord has commanded, saying, you see, this is not man-made, this is from God, so better pay attention to it. That's what He's saying here. This is the statute of the Torah, that's the word that is used here, which the Eternal has commanded. Not Moses, not man, not the head of your organization, not the minister, not the pastor, not anybody. God. You see, so people have to go to God and say what He said about this or that. You know, a lot of people, you know, hang around today, you know, making that statement, that cliche, that idiom, you know, what would Jesus do? How would you know what would Jesus do if you do not study His law? You see? It sounds very clever. What would Jesus do? Well, if we don't tell them what Jesus did from Genesis 1:1 until Revelation, the last verse, how would they know when they are, you see, confronted with any given situation? How would they know? That's where the false prophets are. They just throw it to you, you know, those cliches, but they don't back them up with information of what Jesus said from the beginning until the end. Well, here it is, what Jesus said. And Jesus and the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, this is the statute of the Torah which the Eternal has commanded, saying, speak unto the children of Israel that they bring you a red heifer. And that was something that they have done and they want to do again, you know, in Israel in order to be able to sanctify the Temple Mount and the priesthood and things like that. So it's a law of Jesus Christ. It's a law of God. He commanded that. It's not done away with, and He's commanded many other things. This is just one of them. So He says here at this point, a red heifer, faultless, without blemish, without spot, where is no blemish, and there aren't many red heifers, there are very, very few, you see. So it's something very unique, very particular, and they couldn't substitute, no blemish, and upon which never came yoke. And you shall give her unto Eleazar the son, that is the priest, the son of Aaron. And she shall be brought, that's, you know, the first one, obviously, that was then, but after that it was others. You know, whenever there was a need for it. And you shall give her unto Eleazar the priest, and she shall be brought forth without the camp. You see, in this case, it's not in the tent, it's not in the tabernacle, take it outside. Why? Because it's going to be for sin offering, and God wanted it outside. And that's what Christ was taken, outside. He was a red heifer, in that sense, when you think about it. And she shall be slain before his face, and Eleazar the priest shall take of her blood with his finger, and sprinkle of her blood toward the front of the tent of meeting seven times. You see? Now he's outside there, outside of the camp, and this is what he's doing it, and he's just pointing toward the direction of the tent. And that's what he's doing there. Seven times, perfection of healing, of forgiveness, of cleansing. Verse 5, and the heifer shall be burnt in his sight, he has to watch it, her skin and her flesh and her blood, with her dung, shall be burnt, total sacrifice. And Christ gave himself totally. You see? His body was broken all over. It was not recognizable. It was a total sacrifice. Why? For the healing of the nations, his own people, and everyone else. And so everything is burnt. And the priest shall take cedar wood, and hyssop, and scarlet, and cast it into the midst of the burning of the heifer. And he had to do exactly what God told him to do. And each one of them was symbolic. You see, the cedar wood would produce the incense, sweet-smelling savor, acceptable to God. Hyssop is a cleansing agent. Scarlet, the blood that was going to be shed by, later on, the one who gave these instructions. Each one had a purpose. And he cast it into the midst of the burning of the heifer. Then the priest shall wash his clothes, because he became unclean. That's what Christ said, don't touch me to Mary, you know, to Mary. Mary Magdalene, because I've not ascended yet, you know, not accepted by God. So, you know, this priest is enacting all these things. Then the priest shall wash his clothes, and he shall bathe his flesh in water, and afterward he may come into the camp, and the priest shall be unclean until the even. And mind you, Christ was unclean until ascended up to heaven. And so he said, don't touch me. After he ascended, you know, after that was over, then he could be touched. And he that burned her shall wash his clothes in water, and bathe his flesh in water, and shall be unclean until the even. And a man that is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer, and lay them up without the camp in a clean place, and it shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel for a water of sprinkling. It is a purification for sins. So every time there was something that they needed to be cleansed of, they took a little bit of that heifer, you know, which could go on for a long time. We don't know how many years it was used for, and before they had to have another one. And so they used it for that purification from sin, and he that gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be clean until the even, and it shall be unto the children of Israel and unto the stranger. Everybody has to be cleaned. Obviously the stranger that worships God, we're not talking about those who do their own thing. And unto the stranger that sojourns among them for a statute forever.
It's not
done. Then in verse 11, and he that touches the dead, even any man's dead body, shall be unclean 7 days. So this is one of the things that they use it for. And the same shall purify himself therewith on the third day and on the seventh day, and he shall be clean. But if he purify not himself the third day and the seventh day, he shall not be clean. Got to follow these instructions. And obviously, it had symbolic meaning, spiritual meaning, so they had to do it. It's not just a physical thing, you know. God is not just playing games here, you know, giving them things to do, because they got nothing else to do. All these things are symbolic, they are spiritual, they have meaning, and they will be reenacted again when the temple is revealed. Verse 13, whosoever touches the dead, even the body of any man that is dead, and purifies not himself, he has defiled the tabernacle of the Lord. And when the temple is rebuilt, anybody who is unclean, he's not able to come to the temple, and if he does, he's going to be in trouble. God would know that. And that soul, it says, shall be cut off from Israel. Even if nobody knows, God knows, and he's going to take care of that. Because the water of sprinkling was not dashed against him. And he shall be unclean, his cleanness is it upon him? This is the law. This is the Torah. Jesus Christ is saying it, and not one jot or one tittle from this Torah shall pass away. He made it very plain, until all things be fulfilled. You see? It was not done away with. Yeah, people are not studying this law. Now, obviously, today we don't have a temple, we don't have a heifer, so this in particular cannot be done. So it's a law of circumstance. You see? As I mentioned that several times. A law of circumstance, in a sense, when conditions are there, circumstances are proper and right, and you can do it, fine. But if you can't, you can't. God doesn't demand unreasonable things from us. But nevertheless, we should not think that because, you know, we don't have the conditions for it or circumstances, that it's done away with. No, it's on the shelf for certain things. And so when a man, God says in verse 14 again, this is the law, this is the Torah, when a man dies in a tent, everyone that comes into the tent and everything that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. And every open vessel which has no covering, close bound upon it, it is unclean. And whosoever in the open field touches one that is slain with a sword, you go to war, that's what happens, or one that dies of himself, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. The people of God had to be holy, because when you appear before God, you had to be holy. When you come to the tent of the tabernacle, you see, if you didn't, it's a different issue, but even then you'll be unholy, you see, and you're supposed to go through that process of being purified and clean, because all those things are symbolic that God is holy, and without holiness none can see the Lord. And if people who are unholy because they are unclean and they come to see God, they're going to be put to death. You see, and a lot of people don't realize that they come to God in a very unholy state, and they think that they can do it without impunity, that is, without punishment, with impunity. And so we read in verse 17 now, and for the unclean, they shall take of the ashes, the burning of the purification from sin, and running water shall be put thereto in a vessel. And when you read running water in Hebrew, it's always maim hayim, living water. You see, it's not just running. God could have said running water, he didn't. He said living water. He that comes unto me, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living waters. You see? And again, one of those things that people thought they know better and translated it the way they wanted to. And so they said running water. But God had something in mind when he said living water. It was a spiritual connotation there. And this was symbolic of the living water that will come in terms of the Holy Spirit, and will flow out of our belly. In other words, when we eat the flesh of Christ, when we drink his blood, when we obey the law of Moses, which he commanded him, you see, and the tree of life is synonymous with the word of God, you see, and it's also synonymous with the river that comes from under the throne of God that you're going to see, that is under the throne of Christ in the future, in the temple, and later on, in the temple that will be after the 1,000 years, you see, that's the running water that he's talking about, because dead water, in essence, in other words, water that is not moving, cannot give life. So, it was symbolic why God wanted them to do it that way, and they could not just go to a little pond and get water from there. It had to be running water, you see, or, as God calls it, living water. And when it is standing in one place, it's not alive. So this is a spiritual concept here, and they had to follow it. And so this is what it says here. They have to take, for the purification, water from, a stream, where there is running water or living water. And it this kind of water they shall put thereto in a vessel. So you go over there, you pick up scoop some of that water, and you pour it, and you put some ashes in it, and you pour it on the person. You see, obviously all these things are physical things, are symbolic, you see. They by themselves can do nothing. And for that matter, even the sacrifice of Christ can do absolutely nothing for us unless God accepts the sacrifice, and then he accepts, you see, the atonement of that blood and blood itself. You know, what can blood do for us, you see? So, when we are being washed by his blood, that too is just a symbolic, you see, because blood cannot do anything. All that is symbolic of what God is doing. So symbolism for God are extremely important, and unfortunately a lot of people departed so far from it that they have no appreciation for it. Especially in this country, they have no appreciation for ceremonies and pomp and things like that. In other countries, they still have a lot of it because the symbolism is very meaningful. But even here, they have a measure of it. But generally speaking, they don't. Verse 18, we read, "And a clean person shall take hyssop." You see, he cannot be an unclean person. Just like the priest, before he atones for the sins of Israel, he himself has to be clean. And before Christ could ascend up to heaven and be accepted as a sacrifice, he had to be clean without spot and blemish. Or else God would not accept his sacrifice, and therefore he would not be able to, in turn, atone for our sins. And so did the priest, and so this person here. "And a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water and sprinkle it upon the tent and upon all the vessels and upon the persons that were there, and upon him that touched the bone, or the slain, or the dead, or the grave." And so one of these days, if we're in that location, in Israel, in Jerusalem, when they finally have the red heifer, and they burn it, and they have the ashes, and they go to a stream of water, and they do that, they're going to do exactly just that way. They're going to purify the temple mount, they're going to purify all the vessels that they're going to use for the sacrifices and the clothes and all those things that they are doing now. And they're going to pour it, likewise, they're going to sprinkle it on the priests to sanctify them, and they're going to have a high priest. And he too is going to be sanctified, wherever that person is going to be. So you're going to see this ceremony, and it's going to be quite a sober ceremony, and the Jews have great appreciation for it. They're going to stand in awe before it, you see. And I'm going to mock it and say, "Well, the funny thing, you know, what are you doing?" That's the difference between the people who were raised on the law of God and those who have been taught to have contempt for it for 2,000 years. And so, we read here in verse 19, "And the clean person shall sprinkle upon the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day." So there are 7 days of purification, and you have to do it one on the third and one on the seventh. And this too has symbolism. "And on the seventh day he shall purify him." The seventh day, you've got, for example, the days of unleavened bread. 7 days, you see. Not 6 days or 4 days. And what happened on the third day? When you think about it, what happened on the third day in history? Well, you all know what happened on the third day in history. Somebody rose up. The sacrifice was accepted, and the atonement of sin was given to all of us. And whether it is linked exactly to this one or not, I don't know. All I know is something happened on the third day. And on the seventh day, that is, he shall purify him, and he shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water, that's the unclean person, and he shall be clean at even. But the man that shall be unclean and shall not purify himself, that soul shall be cut off from the midst of the assembly. So people could not play games with the laws of purity. God made it very plain. You either go through that ceremony or you're dead meat. And a lot of people are filthy in their mind and their heart. They're disobedient to the law of God. They're contemptuous of His way, of His path. And they think they're holy people. And they call themselves the holy people of God, the new Israel of God, the righteous people, the true people of God. And they are as filthy as they can be. And one of these days, are going to have to either remember the law of Moses, which he commanded, you see, or he said, "I will bring upon you utter destruction." And they're not going to be playing games anymore when that time comes. And so he said, a person that is not willing to go through that ceremony to purify himself, he's going to be cut off. Why? Because he has defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. You see, there are a lot of people who are in the midst of the congregation of the people of God, and they are full of pollution, this kind or that kind, and they are defiling the body. And the responsibility, generally, of the congregation, not just one man called the minister, but the congregation. That's where God laid the responsibility on the congregation, you see. And obviously, the elders of the congregation, but all together, they're all responsible for allowing such filth in their midst. They have to do their part. And whatever God allowed us to, caused us or allowed us to do or commanded us to do, that's basically what is the is the responsibility of the congregation. And so we read here, a person like that will be cut off because he has defiled the sanctuary of the Eternal, and the water of sprinkling has not been dashed against him. He is unclean. And as long as you don't go through that ceremony, God says you're unclean. So, how long do you do that? Well, that's an old thing, an ancient thing, people, that didn't know any better. And, is it Jewish stuff? Is it old stuff? Is it Old Testament stuff? What's the application of this one? Verse 21. And it shall be a perpetual statute unto you, that is unto them, that is for all of Israel. And he that sprinkles the water of sprinkling shall wash his clothes, and he that touches the water of sprinkling shall be unclean until even. And we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.